Thank you for tuning in. This is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I'm an Extension Educator. Today, I am joined by Catherine Sharp, who is also an Extension Educator from the Center for Youth Development. Catherine, thank you for joining the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, Carrie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you back. Now, this podcast is about human rights in relation to our work with youth, how we think about our programs, and how we talk about human rights with youth. Before we dive into that, though, I do want to mention that this is Catherine's second podcast. She was in episode 5, Why Equity Matters in Youth Development. And I will admit that is truly still one of my favorite podcasts. So I'm really excited to have you back. It took too long to get in your schedule and have you share your experience and your insights in these areas. But I'm so excited to have you back.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be back.
Now, while that episode focused on equity, in a moment we're going to be talking about human rights, as I just mentioned. Tell us about how you came into this work, what you focus on for the Center for Youth Development and for our youth programming.
Sure. So I have worked with the Center for Youth Development for 11 years, and I actually came into the Center for Youth Development through doing civic engagement, starting civic engagement clubs with audiences who we weren't generally serving or we hadn't historically been reaching. And so really the issues of equity and human and civil rights were very closely tied with that, because those are a lot of the issues that those young people became interested in taking on. They're also issues that I've dedicated a lot of my life work to, both paid work and what I call my love work, you know, my volunteer work outside of work time. And for the Center for Youth Development, I supervise Hennepin County, which is, where Minneapolis is, and also Scott County, which is a combination of suburban, exurban and rural areas that is very close to Hennepin County. And I also work on volunteer systems, and I have a real passion for diversity, equity, and inclusion work in our center.
Thank you. Well, let's get into our conversation today. I'll mention that Catherine did write a blog on our Youth Development Insight blog, which I mentioned quite a bit through this podcast series, and I like to get my colleagues on to talk further and deeper about those conversations that they start in that format. In that blog post, you ask some questions. Should rural access to broadband be considered an educational necessity, given how much of the school learning requires online research? Second question, why do we allow people to be homeless even during the bitter cold? And a third question is access to healthy food a right or a privilege? Now, those all seem like a really big, diverse, questions that go all over the place. How do those conversations help us get into this conversation and why human rights are relevant for young people?
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you started with those questions, because those are real life questions that sprang from conversations that I had with young people. And it was when I was in the process, we were formulating this human rights project that we created in the central region of Minnesota. And it was interesting because I had human rights so at the center of my attention. And then when these young people brought up these seemingly disparate topics, I was able to have conversations with each of them about those topics within the framework of human rights. And the human rights framework is really a framework that springs from just after the Second World War, when countries from all over the world got together and drafted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which ended up being adopted by countries all over the world as well. And that's what we hold up, that among other treaties that have come since, are what we hold up as sort of our universal agreement that these are things that people have the right to. Now, these are not necessarily things that we always live up to. And in fact, there are aspects of them that country by country, they may have very different feelings about. For example, in the those questions that you just read out, access to education is one of the agreed upon universal human rights. But what does it mean to have access to education? And that evolves as we grow and as the world changes, right? And so it was a young person who has both lived in an urban area and in a rural area who raised that question. She said, you know, I have access to broadband now, but where I used to live, I couldn't have even done the homework that our school assigns now. And I couldn't do online college classes, which I'm now doing. She raised all of these different issues. And I was like, that is a really fascinating conversation. Now, does our society necessarily agree that that's a human right? Do we guarantee access to that? No, but we don't actually guarantee access to a lot of things that are explicit in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, like access to shelter, access to sufficient food. And that's one of those examples where these universal agreements do not necessarily mean that they are universally agreed upon by every individual or every country, and it does not make them enforceable. But they do have a moral and ethical nature to them, like that larger picture, that larger sense of an ethical framework that I find really helpful in having conversations with young people, because I feel like they instinctively, when they're young, have a sense of this larger right and wrong. Like, I think any parent who lives in a cold place and who has come up to a stop sign and seen someone out asking for money or without a jacket has had to have a conversation with their child in which they strangely almost find themselves justifying homelessness and why we can't do something about it. And their child saying, no, that's wrong. Right. And so what I'm trying to do is provide an opportunity for young people to explore that, the sort of intrinsic moral and ethical values that often spring from young people, and discover, oh, there's actually a language and a framework for this. And there are people all over the world who dedicate their lives, their careers, their time outside of work, their educational path to learning about these rights and to helping us better fulfill them.
These opportunities that you've had to have conversations with young people have really demonstrated and proven that human rights are relevant to our young people's growth and development and part of what they want to talk about. You've done some work on action projects work with young people in this area. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So we just recently concluded our pilot project of, like I mentioned, the Central Region 4-H Human Rights Project. And that was a combined, it was sort of a hybrid experience where most of it was actually done through web-based learning. And we had webinars and we emailed and we had different ways of communicating online so that we could reach young people across our 15-county central region, which is a pretty large geographic area. And then it culminated with a visit to the Advocates for Human Rights, who were a partner in creating and running this entire project, and also a visit to the University of Minnesota's Human Rights Program, which is part of the College of Liberal Arts and also has connections to the law school and to the Humphrey Institute School of Public Policy. And so we, as part of that, we asked the young people to create a project on the topic of their choosing. Once they had learned about the Declaration of Human Rights, learned about the different ways we can take action on human rights, they decided on something that was really of interest or a passion topic for them. And then they created an experiential project related to that. And it was interesting because when we first created the overall human rights project, we anticipated young people would come in and not know very much about human rights because we don't do very much human rights education in this country generally. And to some extent that was true, but what we didn't anticipate was we would end up attracting these young people who already are passionate about a topic, already are young people who stand up, whether it's standing up for LGBTQ issues in their middle school, or whether it's standing up against bullying or against racism in their private high school, or whether it's standing up for young people who don't have access to some basic resources and trying to create an opportunity for free sharing among students at their suburban high school. These are young people who already really had a passion, and it was really exciting to be able to create a space for them to not just connect with the human rights experts from the Advocates for Human Rights and at the Human Rights Program, but help them to connect to one another too, and to see that they are not alone in caring about these issues, and they're not alone in wanting to take action on them, because it can be kind of isolating to be the one standing up in your middle school or high school on one of these issues. So it was really special to watch them develop and refine their arguments. In fact, one of the young men who was part of the group, when he was asked why he wanted to participate, he said, "I want to be better at standing up and have better arguments for things." And he took on bullying. And by the end of the project, he did a presentation about the five or six human rights that are violated by bullying in school. I mean, that's an amazing evolution from someone feeling kind of isolated and feeling like, you know, not sure of how to speak out on something that clearly you feel strongly about, to really feeling like, oh, I've got this. So that was really exciting to watch.
What an incredible platform that you provided for young people to be able to develop that skill.
Yeah. And it was interesting because the final projects really ranged in type. From educational, like a, you know, teaching about the human rights affiliated with bullying or affected by bullying, to all the way to a multimedia art piece and media compilation around LGBTQ issues and how they relate to schools and school access for LGBTQ youth. I mean, really creative expressions. And and there's another group of young people who weren't able to come to the site visit, but who continue to do their project in their school, of, like I'd mentioned, creating a free swap for basic needs items that young people in their community, that some young people in their community don't have access to, and other young people in their community have an abundant supply of and are willing to share. And so creating a anonymous, no shame, free swap place where young people can access those basic things, like feminine hygiene products, right? It seems like such a basic thing, but can be really expensive for a low-income family. And so it's interesting to watch young people really playing these out in different ways.
As you're talking about that, I want to ask you, what are the next steps with that program for the young people who participated? And then will you be doing this again?
Those are two very good questions. I have a better answer for the first one than the second one. The first part is, each of the young people has identified some way, something that they're going to do with their project. And for several of them, they're taking them back to their school community, and they're going to present them to their school or to their school leadership. We also are going to create some sort of space for them to highlight them at the state fair, so that people in the 4-H building can see that they did this learning and that 4-H is interested in helping young people really become engaged global citizens and social change agents in their communities. And in terms of the project, we're currently getting the evaluation, we're compiling all of it. That's kind of an ongoing question. We got very good feedback from the young people who were involved, and it was really a joy for me as a staff person to be involved in it. We really enjoyed the partnership, and our partners felt really good about it. But I'm not sure exactly if it will be an ongoing thing, a periodic thing, if it will get integrated maybe with our citizenship now we're calling it civic engagement and leadership, with our efforts that happen already within 4-H. So it will happen in some way. I'm just not exactly sure of the platform.
Well, I hope that it does continue, and we will stay tuned to hear what the next steps with that program are, and then the continued learning and impacts that those young people who have participated in this initial program that you did, that they make in their communities.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that too.
Now, the next thing I want to talk with you is about civil discourse. And it sounds like the young people who participated in this program, it leads us right into this conversation of increasing your skills in civil discourse. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. So it's one of the things that I feel really strong about personally, and I think in our center, we're really trying to build our social and emotional skills, social and emotional learning, and those skills for young people to be able to engage with their world, whether it's in school, whether it's in their family, whether it's at work, whether it's with friends or neighbors. We want young people to have the skills to be effective in their world. And part of that means encountering, being able to encounter different opinions and represent your own opinions and be open to hearing others. And that's actually identified as one of the eight basic youth, one of the eight essential elements of positive youth development. And this project ended up providing a great platform for that. One example would be, we had young people who were participating, who were really interested and passionate about human rights related to women's rights and reproductive rights and reproductive health rights. We also had a young person who was really passionate about exploring human rights for the unborn, right? For fetuses. And that is an area of human rights law that has not been established for largely because they wanted to create consensus, and there is not consensus on that issue. And so she really had to make an argument about why human rights should expand, why it should take that on. And that discipline of trying to justify that, of looking for what she would use, was a really important skill-building opportunity. And one of the cool things is those young people were in a small group conversation with each other, which was very lively. But they all came out of it saying, wow, we learned something from each other, and we would like to continue having more conversations like this. And I said to them, okay, you just leapfrogged ahead of most of the adults who you know by being able to have that conversation and come out of it respecting one another and wanting more engagement.
The last thing I would like to touch on with you is, I know that you have of course, we've heard through this conversation, this passion for people, for advocates, for human rights, who have made plans to dedicate their life for this, that they have taken this next leap. And talk about your experience with people who have that excitement, who have that passion, that drive, and why it matters to connect young people and their learning now and action steps that they may take in the future.
Yeah, that was really one of the most inspiring parts of this project, other than just the fabulous young people themselves and their already existing passion, was to be able to connect them with the professionals, people who have all different kinds of roles, from lawyers to educators to political advocates, from the Advocates for Human Rights, which is a Minnesota-based human rights organization that works really at an international level. I mean, they talked about all of the domestic violence policies they've been working on in Eastern Europe, with national governments in Eastern Europe. I mean, they're really doing important, engaged, global work, but they're doing it here based in our community. And it was so exciting for the young people to get to work with them. We had some human rights coaches who met with the young people online, gave them feedback on their projects, helped them to, develop their skills in thinking with human rights concepts. And then we also met with them in person when we, came to Minneapolis for the site visit. And then we went to the University of Minnesota and visited with folks from the human rights program. And there, it was phenomenal to meet with both faculty and with current students, both undergrads and a graduate student, who are just on fire with this, are on fire and have discovered the thing that really drives them, the thing that they want to build their life's work toward. And to hear them talk about, whether they're researching drug violence in Mexico and trying to track down people who have been disappeared and no one knows what happened to, and they're trying to help track that down, which is such a life-altering thing for everyone involved, to looking at food and food production and different ways of food production and making sure there's enough healthy food production for everyone to be able to have food. I mean, really a broad range of topics, but they got to see people who are doing this. And it was amazing because in our final reflection, one of the young women said, I have discovered what I want to do with my life. I have discovered my path. And I just thought, if that was the only fruit of this project, that is so much more than worth it, right? Yeah. I deeply believe in the concept of youth sparks, and that you never know when a young person is going to find the topic that will light them on fire, that they will make the connection with the adult who will help to be a champion for that spark and really help them to explore it, that they will discover the path. Oh my gosh, I thought I had to do this just for fun. This could be a job. And they they set themselves on that journey. And I believe that in youth development, that's a very one of the very best things that we can do is help young people to connect with a positive vision for their future and with some tangible steps for how to get between here and there.
And that truly what you're passionate about now and what you're good at and what you're excited about can continue with you into adulthood.
Absolutely. In fact, I often say to adults, like to parents especially, don't dismiss your child's funny little interests, their weird little obsession. You know, the kid who has the 200 rock collection may be the future geologist. There may be a reason that he or she has that passion. So I really believe that it's important to take young people seriously. We also by no means expected that every young person participating in this needed to become a human rights advocate and do that for the rest of their life. That was not at all part of the expectation, but just providing young people the opportunity to know about these rights, to know that they are there. Rights, to give them some language with which to engage other people in talking about issues that they're facing, because they're facing so many issues that are bigger than how we know how to address them. And so to have that bigger framework, that global framework, a sort of moral and ethical framework that goes even beyond our national laws and helps us to think in that broader global mindset, I believe truly does help equip them to be engaged global citizens and social change agents, like we talk about in 4-H, in Minnesota 4-H, that we want to be bringing up this next generation to find issues they care about and make a difference in them.
So even if it's not your career someday, you've changed the way they think about the world and their place in it.
That is my great hope. Yes, that is my hope.
Well, I would like to end with this. Will you share with us, if somebody is listening who works with young people and wants to provide this type of experience for the youth they work with, what are some nuggets you can share with them about what you have learned?
Absolutely. The first thing is the power of partnership, of partnering with an organization that's doing tangible work in the world. Because it's such a big kind of abstract topic, I find it to be very helpful to partner with an organization that's doing something related to human rights. Now, we were lucky that we have the Advocates for Human Rights right here. They were interested. They actually initiated the conversations with us about partnership, and they do very broad spectrum human rights work. But every community has someone who does human rights work, whether it's on domestic violence, whether it's on workers' rights, whether it's on youth rights, whether it's on food access. You know, everyone has someone who's doing something concrete. And I think for young people, that is really helpful to see how this plays out in the world around them. And the second thing that I would say is really providing opportunities for young people who self-identify that this is something they're interested in learning more about, giving them an opportunity to connect with one another. That was something we underestimated in this project, was how powerful that peer connection was going to be. And if we do it again, which I hope we will in some format, I am going to really prioritize building it as a much more circular, internetworked project, because I think those young people, they need to support each other. You know, they're often being really brave in really hard circumstances that often feel really lonely. And in fact, one of the college students at the U of M, maybe it was a faculty member, right as we were about to leave, she said, I just want to say one more thing, that it gets easier to do this work if you find other people doing it. Because right now you're standing up and you're feeling alone and you're feeling like you're the only person who cares and the only person who's ever going to be brave. But you go out, you come to a program like this, you find other people and they help to keep you strong. And I think that's also one of the real benefits of youth development, is that we help connect positive peer relationships just as much as we connect positive youth and adult relationships. So I would just really encourage people who are considering this to take that aspect seriously as well, and see these young people as not just the future, but the current today change agents for good in our communities and in our world.
And then let's mention as well how you connected these young people, because sometimes in one community you feel isolated. You used a web-based environment to bring young people from many communities together, and they thrived in that environment and felt very comfortable there. And I think that model of using distance technology to bring young people together, especially around human rights, equity, civil discourse conversations, that it's a way to find those people who are like
exactly.
you.
Yep, because if we had done a program just in one county, we might have had a really small little program. But because we were able to expand it, we were able to get those little social change agents from all over the region and connect them with one another. And yeah, it was great. I mean, we had young people doing it on a computer, doing it together with their friend, on their phone. I mean, really able to participate in a variety of ways. So yeah, I highly recommend that as well.
Oh, great. Well, exciting work, and just makes you look to the future. Our young people who are moving us to the future in exciting ways. So I thank you for having this conversation with us today, Catherine, about a framework for human rights and how you're sharing this with young people who are ready and wanting to explore, and giving us ideas of how we might do that with the young people we work with as well.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, Carrie, and I really appreciate being able to share this story and hopefully get people thinking about how to integrate human rights into their youth development work.
All right, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
I look forward to it.
Now, as we bring this podcast to a close, please remember to visit our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. You can learn more information about our trainings, education, and tools for youth workers and leaders, and also check out our information about the Minnesota 4-H program, how you can get involved if you aren't already. Thanks again for joining me, Catherine.
Thank you, Carrie.
This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.